This show is created for adult audiences only. Our show notes include content warnings and other helpful information. We strongly recommend taking a moment to assess the situation before continuing. Let's begin.
Episode 135, Waverly Hills Sanatorium. In the hills of Louisville, Kentucky, there stands a place shrouded in darkness. A place where the thin veil between the living and the dead seems to blur. This is the story of Waverly Hills Sanatorium. A place with a history as chilling as the winds that howl through its corridors. Built in the early 20th century, Waverly Hills Sanatorium was intended to be a beacon of hope. A place of healing for those afflicted with the deadly disease of tuberculosis. But as the years passed, it became something much more sinister. Tuberculosis, or consumption as it was once known, was a merciless killer, claiming the lives of thousands. Waverly Hills was meant to be a sanctuary, but for many it became a prison of despair. The overcrowded conditions, the lack of effective treatment, it all contributed to a sense of hopelessness that permeated the halls. But perhaps most chilling were the rumors that surrounded Waverly Hills. Whispers of experimental procedures, of patients vanishing without a trace, even of dark rituals performed in the dead of night. Soon after came murmurs of apparitions, ghostly figures that roamed the halls, their anguished cries echoing through the empty hallways. But are these merely the fevered imaginings of troubled minds? Or is there something more sinister lurking within the walls of Waverly Hills Sanatorium? Join us as we delve deeper into the chilling history and hauntings of this infamous institution. The tale of Waverly Hills Sanatorium begins in 1910. When construction commenced on what was to become one of the most infamous tuberculosis hospitals in the United States. Opened in 1912, the sanatorium was initially intended to accommodate 40 to 50 patients. But as the disease ravaged the population, the facility expanded rapidly. By the 1920s, Waverly Hills was transformed into a sprawling complex, housing over 400 patients. Over the years, the sanatorium faced numerous challenges in its battle against the disease. With no known cure at the time, treatments were often experimental and brutal, ranging from painful surgeries to the injection of gold compounds, and a practice called collapse therapy. The idea behind this procedure was to intentionally collapse the affected lung to allow it to rest and recover. Ultimately, they found that simply exposing patients to fresh air in open-air balconies was one of the most therapeutically beneficial practices that they could manage. Despite the efforts of dedicated medical staff, many patients succumbed to the disease within its walls. As the death tolls rose, so too did rumors of unorthodox practices within the sanatorium, whispers of patient mistreatment, and questionable medical experiments swirled around the institution, though concrete evidence of such activities remains elusive. In 1961, with the advent of antibiotics and the decline of tuberculosis cases, Waverly Hills Sanatorium closed its doors. Abandoned and left to decay, the once bustling hospital fell into disrepair, becoming a shadow of its former self. But it was not long before the ghosts of Waverly Hills began to make themselves known. In the early 2000s, paranormal investigators descended upon the abandoned sanatorium in search of evidence of the supernatural. Among them were renowned ghost hunters such as Zach Bagans and the team from the hit television series Ghost Adventures. During their investigations, Bagans and his team reported numerous chilling encounters, including unexplained footsteps, disembodied voices, and shadowy apparitions. Perhaps most famously, they captured what they believed to be the ghost of a young girl named Mary, who is said to have died in Waverly Hills during its time as a tuberculosis hospital. The image, captured on camera, shows a small figure standing in a doorway, her ghostly form illuminated by the team's flashlights. Other paranormal investigators, such as the crew from Ghost Hunters, also documented strange phenomena within the walls of Waverly Hills. EVP recordings captured eerie voices whispered in the darkness, while thermal imaging cameras revealed inexplicable cold spots that seemed to defy natural explanation. In the autumn of 2009, sisters Amy and Sarah Branscombe embarked on a journey that would forever alter their perceptions of the supernatural. With a camera, voice recorder, and an unyielding thirst for the truth, they ventured into Waverly Hills Sanatorium's not-so-hallowed halls, excited and unaware of the horrors that awaited them. In a recent blog post, Amy recounted her experience thusly. On a chilly autumn night, my sister Sarah and I embarked on an adventure that would leave us trembling with fear and wonder. Armed with only our courage and a few gadgets we'd picked up for ghost hunting, we decided to explore the infamous Waverly Hills Sanatorium, a place known for its eerie atmosphere and, of course, rumors of hauntings. Our first impressions were a little more corporate and less foreboding than we had hoped, but once we were released into the massive building, things picked up very quickly. As we entered the musty structure, a sense of unease washed over me. The air inside was stale and heavy, carrying with it a genuinely spooky weight. We walked cautiously down the dimly lit corridors, our footsteps echoing off the walls as we searched for any signs of paranormal activity. Strange things began to happen almost immediately. Doors creaked open on their own, and we heard faint whispers drifting through the shadows. Despite our nerves, we pressed on, eager to uncover the truth behind the tales of Waverly Hills, or at least capture something inexplicable all on our own. Descending into the infamous death tunnel was a decision we both hesitated to make, but we ultimately decided that we would regret skipping it. Turns out we were right. Our experience there was worth the price of admission all on its own. The air grew colder as we ventured deeper into the darkness. Our flashlights seemed to struggle to pierce the thick blackness that surrounded us. Then, we saw her. A ghostly figure bathed in an eerie glow, her eyes staring into our souls with an intensity that I could never fully describe. We froze in terror as she beckoned to us. Her voice was like a haunting whisper that seemed to echo through the tunnel. After what felt like an eternity, the apparition vanished into thin air, leaving us shaken but excited, determined to continue our exploration. We emerged from the tunnel, our hearts racing, as we discussed what we had seen. To be honest, the excitement wasn't enough to overpower just how completely freaked out we were. We had to call it quits for the night, but we promised each other that we would return to delve deeper into its haunted halls and uncover as many of its secrets as we could. The place is terrifying and sad and amazing. The history alone makes it worth visiting, One piece of advice. Pay attention to your equipment, and do your best to keep your wits about you. We were inside for all of an hour, and I don't know if it was some supernatural force guiding our decisions, or that the surroundings were just so enthralling. But neither of us even thought to turn on a single piece of equipment until we were back in the parking lot. Despite the evidence gathered by these intrepid ghost hunters, the mysteries of Waverly Hills Sanatorium remains as elusive as ever. To this day, the abandoned hospital continues to draw thrill seekers and paranormal enthusiasts from around the world, each hoping to catch a glimpse of the otherworldly entities that are said to roam its haunted halls. While we here at Campfire wish them all the luck in the world, we wouldn't be surprised if this incredible and horrific structure has a handful of secrets that won't ever reach the ears of the living.
Welcome, campers, to Campfire Tales of the Strange and Unsettling. We are your hosts. I am Ryan.
And I'm Jordan. And now the debrief.
He lives.
I do. I'm alive. I'm alive and well.
If you happen to catch Friday's Camp Divination, where we returned to Dyatlov Pass, we talked about losing Jordan.
Yeah, I was conspicuously absent.
But he lives. So,
yeah.
I think we can count on him being back.
Either that or this whole episode is an EVP.
Ooh, that would be even cooler.
Right?
Let's pretend that's the case.
Yeah, if either of us die, I expect the other person to show up still.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
You got work that needs to be done. And what better way to talk about ghosts and cool shit than to talk to a ghost?
Yeah, exactly.
And have them converse back with you.
Dude, that podcast would blow up so fast.
It really would. It's like talking to the serial killer and...
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. For a true crime podcast, that's like the holy grail, right?
Right.
To actually get an interview with a serial killer.
Yeah. It'd be cool. It'd be cool. It'd be the ghost one. It'd be a neat show. I would listen.
I would, for sure. You could make that show. You could make a fictional version of that show.
Let's do it.
Like, that's an audio drama waiting to happen.
Sweet. Nobody else steal that idea.
Yeah.
We'll add that to our pile of audio drama ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, I had to come back to talk about fucking Waverly Hills Sanatorium.
I mean, at least somebody did.
Yeah, it's about damn time.
Yeah.
The world's been begging for it.
I remember this one from the BuzzFeed guys, the BuzzFeed Paranormal. They have their own show now. I can't think of what it's called, but they did this one, and it is, it's so good. And I was hoping I could figure out the name, but I never even tried to look it up just to double check. You can do yourself a favor and look it up. It only takes a moment. But
I know their new network is called Watcher.
Yeah.
I forget what the actual, I think it's Ghost Files.
Ghost Files. There we go.
That's it.
All right, we looked it up for you, so now you don't even have to worry about it.
I didn't even...
But they did an episode on this one, and it was really good. It was also really funny.
They actually went there twice. They went once for BuzzFeed Unexplained, and then the first episode of Ghost Files, they go back to Waverly Hills. Yep. So, yeah. I love those dudes. Like, especially... I usually don't like the silly approach.
I love it, though, because, I mean, one is, like, true believer and one just hard skeptic.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's what the reason I like it, and I think it's the same reason that I can stand to listen to Last Podcast on the Left, even though all the jokes, is because they're super astute. Like, they do real research.
And oh, yeah,
you know
sure.
what I mean? Like, they're not just coming in there with enough information to write jokes about.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, they really are doing the research, too. So, and they're great personalities, honestly.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, they are.
I could watch them do just about anything.
Same. Yeah, so, as listening to this story, that's I kept thinking about their stint there, and
yeah,
so you know, just kind of recalling that, and it's a creepy place. It really is.
Yeah.
Especially the tunnel, which I know we'll definitely dive into, but super creepy place. But I'd love to check it out.
Me too. I mean, it's like an intimidating structure.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fucking huge building.
Yeah.
Like, just looking at pictures of it, you can like start to feel like get an idea of how scary it would be, of how like what it would feel like to actually stand there in front of it.
And you know what I mean? It's huge. Like,
yeah.
Nah, I mean, you think a place that's going to be specifically for like TB cases and whatever else is not going to be. So, I mean, I know it started out as what, like, supposed to house like 40 to 50 patients.
Yeah.
And then by the 50s, they could hold up to like 400 or something.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That's a massive upgrade.
The process of growth was, because the original, we'll just get into the history.
Okay.
Okay. So the land itself was like Waverly Hill is what we, you know it as today. It started out as like the land was purchased by Major Thomas Hayes in 1883, right? And he built his family home on it. But there wasn't a school near, like, in a reasonable distance for his daughters, so he built a new house and turned his original house into what would become Waverly School.
Okay.
And it was just like one of those old school one room schoolhouses. Then the Board of Tuberculosis Hospitals kept the name when they bought the land, because they bought the whole chunk of land, and they used that building. That wooden schoolhouse was the original. It was the basis of the original sanatorium. Like in the early 1900s, Jefferson County was stricken. It got a huge outbreak of tuberculosis. It got super bad. There were many tuberculosis cases in Louisville at the time because of all the wetlands along the Ohio River. It's like the perfect breeding ground for that bacteria, which is why they used to tell tuberculosis patients, like, you should move to the desert, right? Because the dry air
and all that. Yeah, that's fair.
This is the way I first learned about tuberculosis was Tombstone.
The movie
Tombstone, because that's what Doc Holliday has.
I haven't seen
that
since I was a kid.
Yeah, that's one I go back to a lot. That's one of my favorites.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's a great movie, for sure.
It is. So to try to contain the disease, they expand on the schoolhouse that's standing there, and what they end up with is a two-story wooden structure. And it had like two open-air pavilions. So basically each side housed 20 patients. That was the original building. So that original 40 building or 40 person capacity wasn't even the same building that's standing today. It's just in the same place.
Right.
So they started with a capacity of 40, and they slowly worked their way up to 130 patients, which included 50 beds that were dedicated to children.
Wow.
And yeah, it wasn't. And that included children who had tuberculosis, but it also included children of tuberculosis patients who couldn't be cared for properly anymore because their parents were, you know, dying. So that's pretty crazy that, like, they brought healthy kids in to live alongside the tuberculosis kids.
That's kind of terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine if that was your childhood.
I don't want to imagine it.
Yeah, it's pretty awful. So due to constant needs for repairs on the wooden structure, the need arose for a more durable structure in its place.
Right.
And they also needed more beds because they were constantly having to turn people away. It's weird,
right? It is super weird, I mean, but... it's nuts that like it was that severe and that like serious that
yeah,
the amount of cases is just wild.
I mean, this is a world that is pre-streptomycin, like no antibiotics. This is what I tell my kids all the time when they bitch about having to take medicine. I'm like,
yeah,
it's a goddamn luxury.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
Like, it's.
And then you have these people out here, anti-vaxxers that are.
Yeah. They want to go back to this.
Yeah, well, you enjoy idiots. That those people should just be arrested.
They should at least be ignored.
I mean, if any of you listen to the show, you don't have to anymore.
You know, I'll die on that hill with you. I agree.
Oh, without a doubt. I'm 100% serious. Go read a fucking book. Like, why risk your children's lives and your own? I mean, come on.
Yeah. Agreed. It's absurd.
So, yeah. Go find a new show.
We support modern medicine and science here on Campfire.
1,000%.
100%. Yep. 1,000's better than 100.
1,000's. Maybe even 1,000,000.
Yeah.
1,000,000%.
Every percent.
All of them.
So in the place of the wooden structure, they build a 5-story building, like brick building.
Yeah.
That could hold more than 400 patients.
Jesus.
That was in March of 1924.
New building. This opened what, 1912, right?
Yeah.
I think is when it, 1910 is construction, opened in 1912. Yeah.
Yep.
So over the course of 12 years, it went from 40 to 50 to over 400.
Yep.
And wow.
Yeah. So they started construction on that that huge building in 24. It actually opened in October of 1926.
That's growth.
Yeah. But after the introduction of streptomycin in 1943, so it operated for 20 years at maximum capacity. And then they discovered streptomycin, and the number of tuberculosis cases gradually lowered until there was no longer a need for a gigantic hospital for tuberculosis.
And they closed in 61?
Yep.
Was that the right date? Okay.
They had a few patients left, and they shipped them to Hazelwood Sanatorium in Louisville. So even 20 years after the antibiotics were introduced, because honestly, anytime a new kind of drug is introduced, there's always going to be hesitation among people.
Hesitation, or it doesn't work, you know, like.
Yep.
You have allergies and stuff like that. Yep. Like I have medicine allergies myself. Like, sure. You know, so yeah.
Yeah. So the couple that remained, they got shipped to Louisville, and then Waverly Hills closed in June of 61. The building was reopened the following year in 1962 as Woodhaven Geriatric Center, nursing home, primarily treating aging patients, various stages of dementia and mobility issues, and they also took care of severely mentally handicapped patients. Residents, I think they like to be called.
Mm-hmm. So what happened with that? How long did they stay open?
So Woodhaven failed greatly because it was severely understaffed and overcrowded. It also, they were constantly getting reports of patient neglect and abuse from staff and all the horror stories that make people think that retirement homes are terrible places.
I mean, yeah, you know? I hear about them all the time.
Yeah.
Still.
And yet even, I know.
Which
I
is
know.
Sad.
Even then, even with all that shit going on, it being way overcrowded and understaffed and all the allegations, it stayed open for 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah. It didn't close until the state of Kentucky forced it to close in 1982.
Good for you, Kentucky.
Right?
Good for you.
And then some funny shit happened.
Okay. Let's talk so funny shit.
There's a Simpsonville developer, which is a great town name, Simpsonville. His name was J. Clifford Todd. He bought the hospital in 1983 for $3,005,000.
Wow.
He and architect Milton Thompson wanted to convert it into a minimum security prison for the state. But the developers dropped the plan after neighbors protested. Yeah.
All that wasted money 3 million.
Yeah, well, then the pair proposed converting the hospital into apartments, but their plan relied on the Jefferson County Fiscal Court to buy about 140 acres of the land.
Oh yeah,
back from them, and that never happened. So their plans for the building just froze, basically. Yeah, and they kept a hold of it until March of 1996. A guy named Robert Alberhasky.
Bought
Waverly Hills.
That's a name. Yeah.
Right? He bought Waverly Hills and the surrounding land. He paid $1 million for it. So they lost $2 million on the price. And that's what 15 years of inflation.
Mm-hmm.
They still took a bath on it bad. Alberhasky's Christ the Redeemer Foundation, Incorporated, made plans to construct the world's tallest statue of Jesus on the site. That's why they bought it. Along with an arts and worship center. The statue, which was inspired by the famed Christ the Redeemer in Rio de Janeiro, would have been designed by local sculptor Ed Hamilton and architect Jasper Ward. The first phase of the development, coming in at a cost of $4 million.
Damn.
Would have been a statue of 150 feet tall and 150 feet wide. This was their plan. Situated on the roof of the sanatorium. Yeah. The second phase would be to convert the sanatorium itself into a chapel, theater, and gift shop at a cost of $8 million. So they were going to spend $12 million building this statue and converting the sanatorium.
I mean,
but the
it's putting back into the community. It's giving people a place to worship and a giant Jesus or giant statue. And I mean, a theater.
Yeah. Who doesn't want to make a gift Christ? Shop? I mean, he would have been perfect to fight off Godzilla if that ever went down. So
I'm sure they would have eventually made a movie about it.
Although I think 150 feet, that's more like King Kong sized. I think Godzilla is supposed to be like 400 feet tall.
Hmm.
Right?
Is it that different? I know it wasn't, at least in one of the, what's that recent one where they duked it out?
Yeah, those movies don't really hold to the classic canon.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure originally Godzilla was way bigger than King Kong.
All right.
Either way, King Kong versus Mecha Jesus, I'm into that. I'd watch that.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. So the plan to construct the statue fell through because donations to the project fell well short of expectations. Because no shit. In the period of a year, only $3,000 was raised toward the project, despite efforts to pool money from across the nation. So the project was canceled in December of 1997. You know, they needed $12 million. They raised $3,000.
Yeah, I mean, that's more than I would have expected, honestly.
Almost there.
Give or take.
I just think, like, the balls you have to come up with this plan and rely on one of the most economically challenged areas of the country to pay for it.
Yeah.
You're expecting to gather $12 million in donations in the 90s. This was in the late 90s. In rural-ass Kentucky. What?
Isn't this in Louisville?
I mean, is it in, like, Louisville proper?
I don't know, actually.
I guess I never technically, like, Googled the address and looked exactly where it is.
I can tell you right now. I'm actually looking at their website.
Yeah. I know it's a big chunk of land.
It's 4400 Paralee Drive, Louisville, Kentucky.
Even in Louisville, though, I think a lot of Kentucky listeners are going to be pissed at us.
Hey, when I had my learner's permit to drive, one of the first times I ever drove was literally through downtown Louisville. And I was a hot mess, but I did it. I did it. It was awesome.
Well done.
Well, everybody else in the car slept.
I think they're going to be upset that we've said Louisville like 300 times.
Yes, it's Louisville.
And I believe they pronounce it Louisville.
Louisville. Louisville.
Yeah. Louisville.
Nah, you don't do that. It's Louisville.
Or Louisville.
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 I'm from Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah, that sounded really accurate, actually.
Well, you know what? It's because I'm from Indiana. We're basically cousins.
That's true. It just seems like really ballsy.
Yeah.
To expect. Oh, yeah. I agree. To expect those kind of donations, especially for something so fucking ridiculous. Imagine, like, so after his failed effort, Waverly Hills was sold to Tina and Charlie Mattingly in 2001.
Okay.
The Mattinglys are the ones who currently own it. They hold the tours at Waverly Hills and host haunted house attractions each Halloween.
They figured out how to actually use it to, Which, I mean, why not?
Yeah. I mean, we've had many discussions about paratourism and how some of it crosses the line and all that, but I think this one, they do a really good job. Everything I've read about the tours is it's very focused on the history. It gets spooky, but it's like, it's not... Okay, I think the shining example of what not to do with paratourism is the Villisca Axe murder house.
Yeah, yeah.
That one I find really gross. But it's like, with ones like Waverly Hills, there aren't specific figures from history that you're sort of using to make money in the gift shop. You know what I mean? Like, there are these just vague characters sort of that people have seen over the years. And there's no real connection to, there's no one to victimize.
Right.
Essentially.
Yeah. I agree. Honestly, I think it's great. Like, why not bank off of something that's super creepy? People dig it.
Yep.
And I mean, it's cheap. Like, I'm just even looking at booking a tour. You can go on book a tour for $30. You can that's do awesome. A public investigation for 6 hours for $75. They also have public overnights for $75. Or you can do a private overnight with you and just your group, nobody else, for $1,000.
Dude, that's so worth it.
It's a steal.
That's a vacation right there. Doing an overnight in a fucking haunted sanatorium.
Let me kick off my shoes and
exactly
walk around this cold, musty sanatorium.
Yeah.
Oh,
kick
that's...
back, do a little Estes method.
That is,
you know, that's how I like to relax.
Prime vacation.
It is.
Where are you going on vacation? So, Waverly Hills Sanatorium. Where else?
Yeah, exactly. You know, the wife wanted Maui, but I thought, nah. let's do the sanatorium. No, one thing I wanted to mention was every year on Halloween, they do a haunted house attraction and all the proceeds go toward the fund to restore the building. So that's, if you're in the area, that's something that's really good to support. That's like, because even if you're not into super spooky, if you're not into the paratourism spooky stuff, like this is a preservation of a historic building.
Well, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and to see those crumble into the ground is really sad. Mm-hmm. So I think it's cool that they're
I'm sure
really
just like the upkeep,
it.
You know, even just to keep it going, even if it's just for, you know, just holding investigations and groups coming through and stuff. I mean, there's still upkeep that.
Yep.
I'm sure it's not
absolutely
cheap.
Yeah. Agreed. They're currently, what they're working on is restoring all the windows, and that's like the big project right now that they're working on is replace it. The goal is to replace every, I think the building has like 2,300 windows or something.
Damn.
Yeah.
It's a lot of windows. So,
yes, it is. If you look at like the front of it, that number makes sense.
Yeah.
It's basically fucking covered in windows. So one of the big hotspots that everyone talks about is the death tunnel.
Right.
Right. So I pulled a little info on it. So,
all right.
The thing with this tunnel, so the tunnel served as a passageway for bodies and supplies in and out of the sanatorium. It they built it on the first floor with the rest of the building. So it wasn't even like an underground tunnel. It's just a corridor that sort of like slowly dives down and then goes out of the... The corridor is 500 feet to the bottom of the hill and has a set of stairs on one side, which were the stairs used for the workers.
Yeah.
On the other side, there was a cart that moved up and down the staircase, which transported supplies and other necessities. So since antibiotics didn't exist in the time that the sanatorium was active, other forms of aid were used to treat TB patients. For example, heat lamps, fresh air, and positive talk
It does a body good.
Yeah. Positive talk and reassurance was used to help keep patients alive. Since the death rate for TB patients at the time was one death per day.
Wow.
That's what they were having in the sanatorium.
That's nuts.
A death per day.
At least it was always an open spot, like a spot opening.
Exactly. Yeah, it's true. Every day. At the peak of the disease, the sight of the dead being carried away in full view of the patients lowered the patient morale, obviously.
Of course.
Therefore, the sanatorium tried transporting the dead bodies as secretively as possible to increase the morale and lower the death rates. And that's what they used the tunnel for.
Yeah.
And personally, I think that led to a lot of the rumors about like patients vanishing in the night and stuff like that. That's because they fucking died and they got them out of there through the tunnel before anyone could get sad about it.
I think
it's kind of... Yeah, there's a drawback to that.
There is, but I think at the same time, it's like I can see the reason and the intent behind it. And obviously, I mean, to keep morale up, I mean, especially if there's positive talk and, you know, whatever else, like help keep, you know, these people alive. Yeah, I mean, anything sad or anything that they realize, oh, shit, there are people dying, like I could be next. You know, it's going to make that. Yeah, it's going to cause a lot of issues, right?
But imagine getting a disease that you know kills almost everyone who gets it,
right,
and then you have to spend the remainder of your time surrounded by people who are forcing you to ignore the fact that you're about to die.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That too. Like, right,
there's that can't be good.
No, I mean,
you know, like,
yeah,
it cannot be good. No, you gotta be sad.
Yeah, you gotta grief be is sad. A part of you it, gotta right? also just let them live the remainder of their days. Like,
yeah,
maybe have like, you know, tuberculosis softball days and
yeah, some Patch Adams type shit.
Yeah. Yeah, like and just I mean you know keep the overall morale up.
I mean. They, in addition to morale, they actually thought that using the tunnel would lower the spread rate of the disease to not have the corpses near around the other patients.
Yeah.
You know, which sort of doesn't make sense to me because the patients already have it. You know what I mean? You're not going to get double tuberculosis because you were around someone who died of it.
I mean...
I'm not sure on that line of reasoning.
Yeah, I have no idea, to be honest. I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't think so.
Man, it would suck to get double tuberculosis, though.
It just, like, intensifies it or just speeds it up.
Yeah. At a certain point, speeding it up might not be a terrible idea.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, because of these practices, the tunnel came to be known as the body chute or... the death tunnel by locals and eventually by paranormal investigators visiting the sanatorium. Apart from transporting dead bodies out of the sanatorium, the tunnel was also served as a temporary air raid shelter during World War II.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It was a little fun fact. And another fun fact, in 2007, Waverly Hills Sanatorium hosted the last show of the touring music festival Sounds of the Underground.
Oh.
Yeah. The show featured... You ready for this fucking lineup?
Yeah.
The show featured Job for a Cowboy, The Acacia Strain, Hatebreed, Shadows Fall, Chimera, Guar, Cameo, Lamb of God, and the number 12 looks like you.
Sweet.
That's a fucking show, dude.
I mean, that would have been awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine, like, they're not my favorite band to listen to, but imagine seeing Gwar Waverly Hills Sanatorium.
Gwar was I think Gwar was my first CD I ever got.
That's awesome.
I found it. I think I was 6 years old, and found it at a rummage sale.
Yeah.
And I thought the cover was super cool and talked my mom into buying it for me. She didn't know, you know, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
6 year olds, not their primary demographic.
I remember listening to it being terrified. So, yep. But I can officially say, yeah, that was the first like actual CD I ever had.
That's awesome.
Right.
I never liked Gwar growing up. Like, I could never get into the actual music. But then in my late teens, when I really like sort of fell in love with the Misfits and Danzig, I realized that Gwar's music is very similar.
Yeah.
Like, obviously they put on more of a visual.
I was going to say they're all about affectation. The show for sure.
Yeah. But like the music itself is written very similarly to like to Misfits and Danzig. But yeah, that's, I just saw that and I Jump for a Cowboy sweet. In the Acacia Strain.
And number 12 like, as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
That would have been an awesome show. That would have been
a fucking sick show. Unfortunately, similar festivals will likely not happen again because of what ruins everything that has to do with music, local residents.
Well, of course.
Complained.
That or people just get rowdy.
Yeah. Oh, people undoubtedly were getting rowdy.
They were probably going so hard they were raising the dead.
Yeah. Definitely. So, finally, I grabbed this from the Waverly Hills website.
All right.
So, it's just a little about the specific hauntings that have been, and I do mean a little. So, like I mentioned before, in 01, Charles and Tina Mattingly bought the property and began its restoration. Volunteers soon had their own encounters to add to the growing lore of Waverly Hills. Many reported unexplained slamming doors and sightings of a mysterious man in white drifting throughout the corridors. Others had run-ins with Timmy, a spectral boy who roams the hallways and likes to play ball. When the facility officially opened for public for tours, visitors have continued to corroborate these experiences.
Nice.
So apparently, Timmy's been seen a bunch of times, and the old man, and then there's the woman that has been seen in the death tunnel on several occasions. Those are like the big ones.
The little girl, right?
Yep, in the doorway. That was the Zach Bagans. That's what he saw. That's what they captured.
But yeah, I mean, it's super cool. The story of the one, the Amy and Sarah that you told at the end. I know I made a comment like as soon as you were done, but like the whole thing is, of course, they didn't turn on any of their equipment because how convenient, right? Like,
yeah,
they have this like major thing happen to them as they're like going in there expecting and hoping and expecting something to happen. It just so does, but you know, it also just so happens they didn't turn on their equipment or do anything to. Maybe try and, you know, verify, like, yeah, it's just annoying.
I know. And obviously this is a random blog post I found, like, on some, it may as well have been, like, a GeoCities website.
Could be, I mean, like, it could just be, like, a little fictional story or something, too, but regardless.
It could have been, but it also, I mean, she wrote it as if it were real, and she definitely, I mean, it could be not even a real person, right? Like, the person who wrote it could be like a 60-year-old guy.
Yeah.
And who's never been to Kentucky. You know what I mean? Like, who knows? But I thought it was a cool thing to add in there. Even though her writing style makes me like nauseated because it goes back and forth so quick.
For sure.
It literally feels like two different people wrote it.
I mean, I can see that. But what I thought was like very wild about that one is that they see this thing and they also hear it.
Yes.
Like, you know, so that's it's not just like a one and done sort of thing. I mean, they have lots of things happening all at once.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yet,
so if we take the story at face value and just assume that this really happened to these women.
Right.
Like they were hearing whispers the whole time they were walking through the death tunnel. And I think when they saw when they got the visual apparition, right, those two experiences became one. They like lined up.
Yeah.
Right. That's how I envisioned it.
That's fair. Well, that's fair.
But yeah,
maybe it was the fact that they didn't have anything on was why they happened to, you know, actually have an experience.
Yep. That's another argument. Too. It's right. Like that's why like people's batteries get drained and things, because there are theories that like the presence of electronics tamps down a spirit's ability to communicate. So they like do everything they can to remove that hindrance.
But it's also said that they feed off of that energy, and that's what also
can that's drain another theory. Them
to, right.
Yeah,
I guess. I mean, you know, I don't think we'll ever know for sure, but
right, of course.
Unless
fun to talk about, though,
we can, you know, come up with like a house like 13 ghosts and figure out a way to like
examine them.
Right, right.
Yeah, exactly. Oh man. Well, when I die and I come back to do the podcast with you as a ghost, I'll let you know.
Yeah, yeah. Please. Also, be absolutely willing to be examined.
Oh, duh.
Okay, good.
Because, you know, that's what I want my afterlife to be. An eternity of being trapped. That's what I want.
Yeah, but you would also get to be on a podcast. You could...
Well, that's worth the price of admission right there. Vicariously
bank millions.
It's true. I could watch you get fabulously wealthy.
Yeah.
That'll be a comfort.
Hey, if you want to hang out, you're welcome.
Yeah,
I'll buy things for you to do.
I appreciate that. Yep. I'll come back as the ghost. You just have to like set aside like, you know, a percentage of the profits for my kids.
Oh well, yeah.
Cool. All right, deal.
Yeah.
All right. That works. Deal's a deal.
And then they can come over and, you know, hang out with you when you're on the pod.
When I'm trapped.
We'll keep you in a glass cage.
Yeah, of emotion.
Mm-hmm.
I want to watch 13 Ghosts.
Right.
I haven't watched it in so long.
It's a terrific movie, and people like give it so much shit. But I have always enjoyed it.
I mean, I would watch 2 hours of Matthew Lillard reading the phone book.
Same.
I don't care what. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what it. If he's in it, it's worth watching.
Yeah, always.
Always. Such a lovely man.
Matthew Lillard is brilliant.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I loved 13. I mean, that came out when we were, what, like late middle school?
Yeah, it came out. I mean, I just watched it again recently, and what did it come out, like 98 or something?
Had to be late 90s.
Yeah, I want to say, just to pull it up here, 2001.
Okay, yeah. Pretty close.
Yeah.
Yeah. So early high school.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess we would have been freshmen. Yeah.
Yep. That. I loved that movie when it came right. out. Right. I think I rented it like over and over again.
Yeah.
Like what I would go back to. Yeah, because there's like some legitimately terrifying practical effects in that movie too.
Yeah, I mean, like, which was all the ghosts look killer. Like they're awesome.
And the practical effects were novel even at that time, because all the horror movies were making the jump to CGI
right.
and everything. And they had like dudes with spikes driven through their heads and fucking
and the way
torsos detached.
The way the house is and stuff with all like the, oh man.
The shifting walls and all that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome.
Also, you get to start with the dream that everyone has, which is like, someone you didn't even know in your family died and left you everything you ever wanted. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think about that from time to time. Like, How cool that would be.
You and me both. Some like great great aunt somewhere lives a long, beautiful life and passes away at 107 and leaves you fucking, you know, 30 million and a 4,000 square foot mansion somewhere.
Dude.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
Yep.
I'll never get that lucky, though.
Yeah, neither of us will.
That's unfortunate.
It's very unfortunate. But I can, you know, I can clearly state and honestly, confidently, that no member of my family has, going all the way back, has never had $30 million.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, I'm confident that that's the truth.
I feel that. But
so, going back to ghosts, I'm super fucking hyped for Camp Divination this week.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun. Like, it'll be fun to dive into this because,
yeah,
man, there's a lot there, and there's gonna be a lot of, oh yeah, I think a lot of energy we can pick up onto, and
I want to like try to talk to specific entities that have been seen there.
Okay.
And like,
do you have any like names of anybody specific there? Maybe we can.
I mean, the boy that everyone talks about, they call him Timmy. I don't have any like full names. Like I said, that's why I like their paratourism, their brand of it doesn't rub me the wrong way, because there aren't really any real people that we know of attached, specific people.
That's fair.
But there are like very specific entities that lots of people have reported in the same places, corroborating each other's stories. So
yeah, I think it could definitely get interesting.
Yeah, I'm stoked for it.
Awesome.
Well, that note,
I was gonna say, do you have anything else you want to touch on?
No, I'm good.
Yeah,
all right, I think that wraps up episode 135, Waverly Hills Sanatorium.
Thank you. From the bottom of our weird, possibly alien, maybe ghostly, probably cryptid hearts for listening. We absolutely love having the chance to discuss all these wild creatures and events every week, and it's your continued attention that allows us to carry on.
We want to get to know each and every one of you, so please come and check us out on all the socials. At campfire.tales.podcast on Instagram and Facebook, at campfire.totsau on Twitter, and you can also visit our website at campfirepodcastnetwork.com. If you love the show, please rate and review it. It's what truly helps us continue bringing your weekly dose of the strange and unsettling.
And a special thanks to Greg Martin at Reverent Music on Instagram for his contributions to the beautiful music that you hear every week under the debrief. You can find more of his tunes at reverbnation.com/reverent. It's fantastic, fantastic stuff. Go give that a listen.
And that's it. Until next time.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Jordan.
And remember, campers,
stay weird
and trust in the unknown.